This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about the Atlantic halibut.
And first off, thank you, Lauren, for specifying Atlantic halibut, because I almost made a big mistake.
Oh.
Putting a lot of stuff about the Pacific halibut in there, but I caught myself. So that's nice. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. I learned early on from our rice episode to kind of narrow down to do something a little bit more digestible, if you'll forgive the pun, and to make it, yeah, just right, to not bite off more than we can chew, episode topic wise.
Wow, coming strong out of the gates on this one.
I was trying to think of any other metaphor that works there, and I was like, nah, just lean into it. Here we are.
Yeah, I think it's time. I think it's time. Well, is there any particular reason this was on your mind, Lauren?
Well, I had been out to a lovely dinner in Atlanta, and there was a special of halibut, and I was like, you know, what's up with that fish? I had also, to be fair, been looking for a type of fish and had entirely forgotten that, like, two nights earlier I had had that lovely halibut. But then as I was, like, looking through one of the sustainable seafood lists, I was like, oh, really? Okay. And because halibut is like, yeah, under certain circumstances, it is considered a good catch. These things are hyper-local. So, you know, like check resource guides in your area for sustainability. But yeah, in the United States, wild-caught Atlantic halibut are a good sustainable seafood choice as of right now.
As of right now, yes. Yeah. I can't say I have a particular strong memory of halibut, but I know I've had it.
Mm-hmm.
Seafood is like my favorite thing. So
yeah, me too.
A type of fish or something is on the menu, that's what I got.
Yeah.
And I'm sure. I might have had some in Hawaii.
Oh, heck. That sounds like a thing. I don't know. Probably not an Atlantic one. Probably a Pacific one at that juncture. But
see? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do associate it with being like kind of a one of the specials on a menu at kind of like a nicer restaurant. So.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I'm going to keep an eye out because I love seafood and I love fish. So. Yes, speaking of, you can see our past fish episodes. They're always fun.
Mm-hmm.
Also, sometimes pretty sad, but fun. we were just talking about this off mic.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that brings us to our question.
Sure.
Atlantic halibut. What is it?
Well, the Atlantic halibut is a type of large saltwater boned fish that is prized for its firm, mild, sort of like sweet and buttery white meat. It is a big, fast-moving predatory fish, but unlike some other powerful predators that we've talked about, it's a bottom dweller and uses this like kind of cat-like, like hide-then-pounce strategy to catch other fish and other prey. It's eaten however you want to eat a fish, big steaks grilled or baked or broiled, or sliced thin and served raw, or chemically cooked into a ceviche or something like that, simmered into stews like chowder, or cooked and prepared in like creamy fish salads. Yeah. It's got a good chew to it. It's like a more flaky tuna, or maybe like a milder, less fishy, less fatty salmon. It's like the tenderloin of the sea. It always feels like a steakhouse kind of fish. Yeah. Eating and just like seeing the ocean through the window of a room that has like a good warm fire going.
That sounds so nice right now.
Yeah.
That sounds nice always.
I mean, right? I mean, heck. Mm-hmm. Huh. Okay. So, taxonomical name, Hippoglossus hippoglossus. The Atlantic halibut is a type of flatfish or flounder, meaning not that they like hang out with the Little Mermaid, but rather that they are a type of bony fish that live on the seafloor and camouflage from predators by lying flat on one side. All right, fish anatomy. So lots of fish have one eye on each side of their face, so they've got like good visibility to either side, and then a tall dorsal fin on their back and a vertical tail fin, yeah. Some fish, like a goldfish or swordfish, are round boys, but others are pretty flat, and halibut are quite tall from back to belly, but pretty flat from side to side. A halibut that's a couple feet in length might only be a few inches wide. Like just a big old flat oval. And yeah, they spend most of their time not upright, but laying flat on one side on the ocean floor. But this does not mean that they have like one eye scraping through the sand all the time. They have evolved so that as they grow up, one eye migrates to the other side of their skull so that they can lie flat on their side with both eyes looking up.
Wow.
In the case of the Atlantic halibut, the left eye always migrates to the right side of the head. I don't know why.
That's so cool.
It's so cool, and they look so derpy. I deeply need you to go look up pictures of halibut because they just little buddies. Just, they look so smooshed in such a weird way. And I'm like, all right. Okay.
Oh, this is so cool.
Which then reminded me that I have indeed seen, like, illustrations of what a anatomically correct flounder from The Little Mermaid would have looked like. And it's very creepy.
Oh. I almost caught a flounder once. It was the one that got away. It was my big fish story.
Oh, yeah?
But those eyes, they looked at me and said, not today. And no one believes me, but I swear.
They're apparently powerful fish and, like, will fight back. So this makes a lot of sense to me based on what I've read over the past 24 hours.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you for your support.
But okay, they are not born with both eyes on one side of their head looking real derpy. That happens during a metamorphosis stage. But before we get there, all right, so Atlantic halibut are a spawning fish, meaning that male and female fish each release their reproductive cells into the open water, like usually out in the deep ocean, their sperm and eggs, respectively. And just kind of like hope for the best. You know, it's like, all right, go ahead, do it or don't, I don't know. The bigger ladyfish can produce like over 2 million eggs a year in several batches during their spawning season. If the eggs are fertilized and survive, the fry will be about half an inch long when they hatch and will mostly drift with the currents for a few months inward towards shorelines. And there, they'll start moving toward the sea floor where they will go through that metamorphosis and then start swimming and ranging further back out to sea. They develop pale coloration on their bottom side and darker gray to brown on their top side. They feed on invertebrates when they're younger and on other bony fish like cod and haddock as they get older and bigger. They'll also go from like speckled coloration to more solid in color. They reach maturity at about 10 years, which is a long time, and live at least 50 years. They're strong swimmers and, yeah, do sometimes range toward the surface in order to catch prey. They are, in fact, the biggest species of flatfish on the planet. The female fish, which are larger than males, average like 100 to 150 pounds and somewhere around 4 feet in length. That's about 45 to 70 kilos and over a meter long. But they can be 4 to 5 times that big.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they range from vaguely flat person-sized to, like, vaguely flat grizzly-sized. So, yeah.
Oh, no. That would scare me if I saw one when I was swimming about. No, thanks.
Yeah. Luckily, the big ones are more likely to be further out and deeper down. So, yeah.
Okay.
The Atlantic halibut does, yes, live in the Atlantic Ocean, in the cool to cold northern parts along the coast of the U.S. and Canada, up and around through, like, Greenland and Iceland and the coasts of northern Europe. Preferred commercial fishing methods are with long lines and rod and reel. These are least likely to damage the habitat and least likely to catch other species. Though recreational fishers do sometimes accidentally hook one while going for other bottom-dwelling fish, like the aforementioned cod and haddock. We both like eating the same things, so makes sense. Yep. They are also farmed in some areas where the populations are at risk, and in some new areas like Chile. Atlantic halibut are often butchered into 4 large fillets, like top and bottom, left and right side, that can then be cut into steaks or smaller pieces. The flesh is like translucent white when it's raw and will cook up to a snowy opaque white. I have seen recipes for raw halibut dishes like crudo or carpaccio or sushi-style preparations. I don't think I've had it raw, but I understand it's firm and a little chewy along the lines of like a red snapper or I guess sort of like beef, kind of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When it's cooked, it's sort of meaty tender with large flakes, the way that salmon or swordfish are, but again, like much more mild. It's great for delicate sauces or, due to its texture, can stand up against like strong, fun flavors. Yeah.
Mm, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, what about the nutrition?
On its own, halibut has a lot of protein and a pretty great smattering of micronutrients. What little fats it does contain are the good ones. As with other types of large predatory fish, there are concerns about buildup of stuff that you don't want, like mercury in Atlantic halibut. In general, I'd say that fish like this are like a sometimes food.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we do have some numbers for you.
Yes. So the largest specimen ever recorded was caught in 1917 off of Cape Ann, Massachusetts. And it's thought to have weighed about 700 pounds when it was alive.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a large fish.
That is a very large fish.
Due to overfishing during the 1900s, there are a lot of regulations in place about how much Atlantic halibut can be caught wild. In the United States, it's just one fish per vessel per trip out into U.S. federal waters. And there is a minimum size limit to make sure that young fish are allowed to reach maturity and spawn. In 2022, though, commercial fishers caught about 60,000 pounds, worth a little under $500,000. In some other areas, populations are apparently okay, like off the coast of Norway. There is a sport halibut competition there every year with prizes of over 5,000 pounds for the largest single halibut caught and the longest accumulative length of halibut caught over 2 days. It is a catch-and-release competition, though. Yeah. And farming can be a little bit difficult due to this complex life cycle and the sheer amount of movement that they do. But production in Norway reached about 1,600 metric tons as of 2017. So it's a thing that people are working on and that's showing promise.
Yes. But that has been quite an up and down journey.
Oh, yeah.
Over the years. Yeah. And we will get into that after a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we are back with a disclaimer, because this is going to be mostly focused on North America. That's the information I could find. I did specifically try to dig into Norway. I see you, Norway.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't find too much historically. There were some things that were saying like a similar thing was happening in Norway, but it didn't go beyond that. So if, listeners, you have any resources or anything to add, please let us know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people really love smoked halibut in Norway from what I read. So yes, let us know. But okay, the first written record of harvesting Atlantic halibut in North America dates back to 1624 when they were abundant. I believe that record was they're everywhere. But of course, people were catching them before then, especially indigenous people near waters where they were found. Of note, though, because they are a bottom-dwelling fish, they might not have been a key species for these peoples. Mm-hmm. This is supported by the lack of halibut bones at archaeological sites in places like Maine, even when there were plenty of bones from other fish. So hard to say, but people were catching them and eating them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and though they were abundant, they were not at all preferred in the U.S. and Canada, with many fishers discarding them altogether, seeking out more valuable ground fish like cod instead. Sometimes fishers would even string the halibut up until they finished for the day, so they didn't catch it again. So it wouldn't try for the bait again, which I feel is a particular slight. People did eat it. People did eat it. But sometimes they only consumed the head and the fin because it contained more fat. People just weren't into it.
Yeah. Etymology note here. English speakers called these fish halibut based on experience with similar fish in Europe. The word halibut in English dates back to the 1400s and is from Germanic root words for flat fishes called butt, and possibly roots for the word holy. Ostensibly because these flat fish were eaten on Catholic holy days. There are a few similar terms throughout Northern Europe for other halibut, for these and other halibut. Yeah.
Please forgive my childish chuckle at the word butt.
It's cool. I also have to say, like, I had a good cackle about holy butt earlier today. That's pretty great. That's pretty great. Especially in the context of this amazing quote from the Oxford English Dictionary, which is pointing out that there was circa the 1300s an English word for a fishwife that was just butt woman.
Oh my.
And when you get into the puns with fishmonger, and this is just, there are layers, and it's beautiful. And I really appreciate our language.
It is beautiful, and many layers indeed, many layers indeed. Well, before we get derailed completely, the first fishery specifically targeting this fish opened in the U.S. in the early 19th century. However, from a lot of what I read at first, Atlantic halibut wasn't really in high demand in the early 1800s and was still somewhat looked down upon. Certain markets really dug it, though, including Boston, where the demand for Atlantic halibut led to the increased fishing of the waters around Cape Cod and Massachusetts Bay in the 1820s. In the 1830s, fishers in Massachusetts started experimenting with salted smoked halibut. Halibut had proved to be trickier to salt and preserve than other fish in the area because its flesh was thicker.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times when you're looking at, you know, making a fish last, that's what you do. And halibut was being a bit tricksy mm-hmm. about it. The introduction of key railways and refrigerated rail cars allowed for fishers to further commercialize their haul of halibut and ship these fish to where the demand was. And it also helped shift preferences away from canned and preserved fish, which was now becoming viewed as a food for the poor, to fresh fish.
Mm-hmm.
This gave halibut an advantage because it could withstand being iced and shipped while maintaining its quality better than a lot of other fish. This is largely what catapulted it from a fish that fishers were discarding to a highly profitable and sought-after fish. It took Canada a bit longer to go through this shift. I feel like I read something that they were confused, but were like, all right, let's ship it down to Boston.
All right, you want it. You're going to pay us for it? Great. Weird,
exactly.
But great.
Yes. So they were catching it and shipping it to the U.S. largely. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, the first known use of the term Atlantic halibut was in the 1880s. The catch of Atlantic halibut peaked between 1845 to 1900. No surprise, though, the rise in commercialization coincides with the beginning of overfishing of the population of the fish in North American waters. The numbers started to drastically decline with the introduction of commercial industry in the 1840s.
Yeah, like by the 1850s, it basically wasn't worth small fishers' time to even go out looking for halibut in Massachusetts Bay.
Yep. By 1900, landings of halibut had already declined by 95% when compared to the numbers from 1879. Apparently, landings of halibut became so rare in Maine and Massachusetts, they were newsworthy.
Mm-hmm.
People were reporting on it. Despite some people and organizations raising the alarm for decades beforehand, by the 1940s, the commercial halibut industry pretty much collapsed.
Even in areas that had maintained populations up until then, like the Outer Banks of Nova Scotia, catches dropped from like 3.4 million pounds in 1934 to less than 1.4 million by 1946. Just super sharp drop off.
Mm-hmm.
European catches hit their height in the 1950s, but also started dropping pretty sharply after 1965.
Yeah. And in the immediate aftermath of that collapse, there was no plan put in place to recover it, especially the U.S. was kind of slow to get around to it. It wasn't until the 1980s some of the first U.S. regulations around Atlantic halibut were put into place.
Canadian regulations were in place starting in 1988, and catch numbers were actually reduced a couple times over the next decade. But then, since then, as stock has slowly increased, catch allowances have increased again as well.
And this has been ongoing. Efforts to recover the population have been something that have really changed, and the progress has been uneven. In 2004, the National Marine Fisheries Service, or NMFS, listed the Atlantic halibut as a species of concern. Previously, in 1996, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature listed it as endangered. And as always, climate change is a concern, too.
Yeah, since they are like cool to cold water fish. And part of the problem in the United States may be that since we're further south, they're just not coming here anymore as our oceans warm. Meanwhile, though, back in 1996, Chile started up aquaculture for Atlantic halibut. It took them about 12 years to get off the ground. And there's just been some really interesting research, like tagging programs and other stuff into how these fish live and how to help them do better, which has found some fascinating stuff, including that Atlantic halibut move around. A couple of the fish that they studied in the early 2000s migrated some 2,600 kilometers over the course of a couple years from Canada to Iceland. That's like 1,600 miles. That's a long way.
Yes. Yes. And that was one of the fascinating things. A lot of these fish episodes require, which I love, but trying to understand very in-depth research papers.
Mm-hmm.
And I found one that was like, you know, we know climate change is a problem. We know overfishing is a problem. Also, they just move around a lot. And
yeah.
They're sort of kind of unpredictable in what they're doing.
Yeah, and they live on the bottom of the ocean, which is sometimes deep. So it's hard to keep track of them. They blend in on purpose. They're evading us.
Darn you, Atlantic halibut.
but all right. So in some areas of Canada, populations were certified as sustainable by 2013. And currently in the United States, populations of this fish are considered vulnerable. But right, there are some really solid programs in place to rebuild stock with a target date of sustainable populations by 2055. Which is creeping up on us. Regulations are designed to, right, both limit purposeful fishing and accidental bycatch. And in a roundabout way, commercial fishing is part of that conservation. You know, like humans are more likely to protect something if it's tasty or has economic value. Yeah. So as I said earlier, U.S. wild-caught Atlantic halibut is actually considered a great sustainable seafood choice because it is so successfully regulated right now. But right, if you live in other areas, check your local sustainable seafood guide.
Yes. I'm going to be on the hunt. And listeners, if you have any recipes, resources, as I said, please let us know. But I believe that's what we have to say about the Atlantic halibut for now.
I think it is. We do already have some listener mail for you, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth.
Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with... Now I've got to look up pictures of these halibut. I saw some in my research, but I don't think I gave it the time that I should. I think I passed over it too quickly. These images,
they're real sweet looking. Or like real kind of creepy, but like in a sweet way. I don't know. They do have like,
I feel like, yeah,
big, weird, sharp teeth. So that's a situation. But yeah, pretty cool. Nature, y'all.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. I mean, I feel like you and I are on the same page of like, look at that gnarly thing.
It's adorable.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So. We have a message from Chad about the eclipse. And I have to say, ever since we did our marketing around the eclipse episode, we've gotten a couple of notes about it. But I've also heard from a lot of friends about it, and I am loving what people did.
Oh.
I am loving it. So please keep those coming.
Yeah.
You know we're into it. Chad wrote, fun episode on eclipse-themed food. I'm in Texas and drove with a friend to see the total solar eclipse. We had moon pies, sun chips, and Capri Sun. While enjoying totality, I also made a totality blend of black tea, blackstrap molasses, vanilla, and red pepper.
Ooh.
I experimented with eclipse biscuits. My goal was to represent the eclipse over the sun by having something round and savory with a black layer over a yellow layer. I tried a thick black bean puree on corn biscuits, but didn't nail it in time for the eclipse. Oh, well, here in the U.S., I have 20 years to work on it until the next one. I love this. Why did I not think of tea? Totality.
Oh, it's right there, right?
It's right there. It's right there.
Also, that sounds like a delicious tea.
Yes. I mean, this sounds like a lovely feast.
Yeah.
And I have complete faith that over the next two decades... You can figure out this eclipse skits.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I did get a really funny headline the other day on my phone that was like, you have to stay alive until the next solar eclipse. And I was like, okay.
That's a lot of pressure. Also, I wasn't, what?
And now I'm like, worried. Yeah. And also, okay, but sure.
Great.
I'll do it.
Yeah. Oh, heck. Oh, someone should totally make black and whites, like the cookies that, with the amount of eclipse that your area is existing in.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
Oh, man.
Okay, well, we got some time.
We do. Solid 20 years. Yes. I've joked before about saving and never ending because I don't think I can retire, but, you know, it's absolutely... If y'all are still listening in 20 years, I'm still down. There's lots of food out there. Let's go.
Absolutely.
My voice is only going to get better. Taylor wrote, big fan of the show and first time writing in. When I was listening to the baklava episode, it made me think of a store near where I live called The Baklava. I saw it in a mall and didn't have time to go in, but after the episode, I was determined to find out what they're all about. Sadly, it was too crowded to order anything when I went back, but the flavors looked delicious. Walnut, chocolate, and lots of pistachio. One type is even shaped like mussels and is called, drumroll, mussel baklava. Quick pivot, but on the topic of goats, I also wanted to tell you about a coffee shop near me called Moon Goat Coffee. It's a tiny drive-through spot and the coffee is delicious, but more importantly, the cup is adorable. It has goats all over the design. I attached a picture from Yelp because I forgot to take my own. LOL.
That's interesting because we also have goat-based coffees in Atlanta.
Oh, they're all goat-based. Is a frequent coffee thing because the story goes that some shepherds or not shepherds, some goat herds in Africa originally discovered coffee berries because their goats would like eat berries from this certain bush and get all heckin' peppy and crazy. And so Dancing Goats is a local brand that also takes its name from that.
Oh yeah.
Apologies for my use of the word crazy. I think in terms of goats, it's in terms of humans, that's kind of offensive. In terms of goats, I think we're fine.
Goats got a lot going on.
They do. As we have discussed.
Yes. Also, I love this baklava.
Yes. I love that it's so baklava. Popular. I love that it's so popular. That's great. Yeah. And I have seen, some of the, y'all like look up photos or if you've ever seen some really fun shapes because, people make them in these wildly beautiful, intricate shapes and it's so cool.
Yes. I love it. I definitely want to look that up too. I love, once we get to the end of the episode, more work, more fun to be done.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of it.
Oh, yeah. This is the best kind of homework. Come on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks so much to both of those listeners for writing in. Mm-hmm. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life.
Give me museums.
South Pole Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.